Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 45, The Great New York Fire. The episode is going to be a little shorter this week, as the topic we're talking about is not something that's super involved, but needless to say, is of vital importance. It really changes the whole outlook of what goes on in New York City for the entire war. Last week, we finished talking about Harlem Heights, and we had concluded that Howe had this eye-opening experience. Now, he's been beaten by the Americans before. You know, we're just going to beat the dead horse, but Bunker Hill, he had to attack an elevated position. They were fortified. He really took a shellacking from them. 900 casualties? That's a lot, especially for British against provincials, of all things. But Howe still took the ground, so the victory goes to the British. At Harlem Heights, it's a completely different story. What started out as a skirmish turned into a major conflict, and Washington proved that he was able to fight on the same level as the British and beat them. They weren't hiding behind fortifications. They weren't jumping out at them from trees and stone walls. No, at a lot of points during that battle, they were standing at a 50-yard distance between them and the British. They were fighting a European style of battle, and they were winning. So Howe has had his eyes completely opened. Washington's army can fight. So he has to make sure that all this territory that he's gained for the crown is protected. It seems like a bit of overkill to wait 4 weeks before we start another attack, but I'm not really going to get into that right now. Needless to say, he has acquired Staten Island, Long Island, Governor's Island, and New York City. This territory is vital to the British Army as a foothold in America. So he has to make sure it's protected. So he's going to spend time preparing his defenses and shoring up everything. The only problem is, nothing is going to protect New York City from the day of September 21st. In the early morning hours, an American prisoner named John Joseph Henry aboard the frigate the HMS Pearl looked out over the city, and he recounted what he saw years later. A most beautiful and luminous but baleful sight, the size of the flame of that of a candle. This, in fact, was the burning of an old, yet noted tavern called the Fighting Cocks. Another light, as great a distance from the North River. Now, this second light that he sees is not what he originally had thought was that, oh, someone's setting more fires. So this is some sort of attack on New York City. What he's actually seeing is the ships in the East River. They were coming to life because Admiral Howe was ordering men to the city to help put out the flames. They jump in their longboats, they row across, and they get to the city, but the fire is being fanned by strong winds, and they're heading northward. Now, the city fire department is mostly missing. You have to figure that any patriots that would have been in the city fled with Washington. So it falls to the loyalists that are still in the city and the British soldiers to put out the fire. The fire cut a path consuming most of the west side of the city. It's by pure providence that the winds shifted and pushed the flames to the Hudson River. Over 1,000 buildings will burn. A full one quarter of the city lay in ruins. Now, most notably was Trinity Church. With this wooden steeple, it became a flaming spire against the night sky. Now, had the wind shifted in any other direction, there's a good chance the entire city could have been lost. Now, there are some conspiracies, and who doesn't love a good conspiracy theory? Because there was some curious circumstances that the British soldiers and loyalists faced while fighting the fire. It seems that some of the fire buckets that they used to fill with water to throw on the fire, had their handles cut off. Some of the fire alarms went missing, and some of the water had been emptied from the city's cisterns. So those are some of those Twilight Zone little curiosity things that we like, maybe the Patriots did have something to do with it. For those who aren't buying it, there are some explanations that I've come up with that explain away some of these theories. Bucket handles were made of rope, so it's possible that the rope frayed and broke. Unfortunately, the bucket theory, that's all I really have. But fire alarms, well, if those were made of any kind of metal, those could have been taken and reforged into something else. If they were made of lead, they could have been turned into bullets. If they were made in something like iron, they could be used to make tools or defensible positions or nails for nailing the fortifications together. So, I mean, there's any number of things that an alarm, if it was made of metal, could have been used for. So that's one theory I've been working on with that. The last with the cisterns, I mean, the simplistic thought that you could come up with is the fact that the Patriots probably gathered up some water as a reserve when they headed up to Harlem Heights. This way they had fresh water when they got up there. All conspiracy theories aside, though, it will take a full day for the British and the Loyalists to fight the flames. It's only due to the fact that the wind shifted in the right direction and that the fire got stopped cold because it just ran out of buildings to ignite. So you can point all the fingers you want when it comes to conspiracy theories, but the political game is a lot more interesting. On September 23rd, 2 days after the fire, General Howe writes to Lord Germain telling him what has happened. For those who don't remember, Lord Germain is the Secretary of State for the American colonies. He's the man that controls the money, the supplies, and the reinforcements for Howe's army. So it's not really surprising that he paints the British soldiers in the best light possible. He goes so far to applaud his brother for the quick thinking of sending the Marines to help fight the fire. William Tyrone, on the other hand, the Royal Governor of New York, has a completely different view on the situation. He once again congratulates all the bravery of the British soldiers and the Loyalists who fought the fire. But it's with Howe that he has his issue. You see, he believes that Howe did not do his best for the city. You know, Howe sent every available troop in the city to fight the fire, but he left all those troops that he had in the field at their posts. See, the problem was that Howe had become so paranoid after his loss at Harlem that he thought that this was some sort of elaborate distraction cooked up by the Continentals. They start a fire in the city, then they come down from Harlem and catch the British wholly off guard. So he left all his troops in the field for an attack that would never come. On the American side of things, Washington, the day after the fire, sends a letter to Congress informing them of what has happened and calling it an unfortunate accident. The orders from Congress that New York was to be left unharmed even if the British took it were still true. He had nothing to do with it. And it's highly unlikely that Washington would disobey directions from Congress given his track record or lie to them in an official letter. He does let his personal feelings be known in a letter to his cousin, Lund Washington III. Had I been left to the dictates of my own judgment, York should have been laid to ashes before I quit the city. After the fire, the city was placed under martial law. We had talked about this air of paranoia, at least in the British command, and it was all over the city. But the Loyalists in the city were happy with the sense of protection they were getting from the British, at least for now. Many Loyalists would go so far as to join the British Army. Brigadier General Oliver Delancey raised 3 regiments for the defense of Long Island, while Robert Rogers, the man of French and Indian War fame, raised the Queen's Rangers, a Loyalist unit. Even before the fire, it was going to be a tall order to house all the troops that you could in the city, warehouse the army supplies, create hospitals, and take in the large number of refugees from across the colonies. On September 21st, the fire raged for an entire day, in the early morning hours until into the evening. Thousands of people will be homeless, will have dozens of people killed by the fire, and hundreds of troops run around the city all day trying to put out the fire wherever they can. This will become a major problem for the British High Command. And it's not just something that's going to be solved overnight or, you know, could be solved with a victory against the Patriots. No. An entire west side of the city is in ashes. People are living in those ashes. They're creating little slum areas where the homeless are just congregating. It's going to create disease problems. So a lot of problems come from the New York fire, and things that are far-reaching, at least in the future of the war itself. Putting General Howe's reaction aside, it's blatantly obvious that this is a severe problem that he's going to have to deal with. And did he handle it the best way possible? I don't think so, but I also don't see how rapid the fire was moving. The fact that every building in New York at the time is made of wood, I don't think there was much that was could have been done to put out this fire or to stop it in its tracks. The only thing that you had to do was hopefully tear down enough buildings and create enough of a barrier between the fire and fresh buildings to burn to hopefully let the flames die out on their own, which they do. But it's, with a little help from above and having the shifting winds that the city is saved. To me, the New York fire is an interesting topic. It's one of those topics that I felt needed to be talked about on the podcast. Though this episode was short and the topic itself is very small, it has far-reaching consequences, and we're going to talk about those later on. But next week, we're going to get back to our regularly scheduled war, and we're going to move on to the battle at Pell's Point and Throg's Neck. And we're going to talk about how more wonderful decisions on the part of General Howe and the British Army will continue to plague the British Army and give Washington and his army new life. I do have a book recommendation this week, and I thought it was fitting because we were talking about the New York fire. I wanted to save the book recommendation for this particular episode. It's called Unnatural Rebellion, Loyalist in New York City During the Revolution, by Rumah Chopra. This book chronicles key events through the course of the American Revolution and the beginnings of the Loyalist sympathies that they will have from the beginning of the war until the Loyalists are basically forced out of the city at the end of the war. So next week, I will bring you Pell's Point and Throg's Neck. Everyone have a great week. And as always, please, please go to iTunes. Give me the 5-star rating. As I promised a few days ago, I have a Nathan Hale episode that I'm getting ready to finalize that I can bring you guys. I'm holding it hostage as a bonus episode. So if you guys just go to iTunes, give me a 5-star review. I haven't gotten any yet. I need 3 5-star reviews. You give me the 3 5-star reviews, you guys get Nathan Hale. So please, 5-star reviews. I'm sending it out on the airwaves. I'm also going to put it on the Facebook. So till next week, everyone have a great week. And as always, keep that powder dry.